KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
It is Friday. You made it. Just seems, you know, some days went kind of slow. Today's the slowest day of the week for me. Not every week, just like today. It's gone super slow. It seems like just yesterday we were saying, it's Monday, and a weekend will be here. And here it is, just around the corner, probably about 4 hours away for many of you. And if you are a man or a young man, this may be of interest to you. Man Up is meeting at Calvary Church Albuquerque tonight at 4001 Osuna Road Northeast. And that'll be an evening that gets underway at 5:30. They'll have the grill lit up or some kind of free food. You know, it's a free food, guys. Free gets the guys here, which is nice to see. In addition to the ministry tonight, which is, Man Up meetings typically include time and worship together, which when you hear a few hundred men worshiping the Lord, that is just, it's powerful. Hopefully you can get down and be a part of that tonight. Now, the pre-activities get underway at 5:30 with feasting on whatever they have off the barbecue. And then at 6:30, worship and a message. After the message tonight, guys are hanging out in the green belt at Calvary Church for the evening. It's camping out. So if you've got your tent or maybe you just prefer to sleep out on the grass or what have you, you can be a part of that. Details are on the web at calvarynm.church. Full hour today with Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates, our Friday financial update. Brian, great to have you in studio.
Yeah. It's a good topic we've got today, so yeah. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, you brought all 8,000 pages with you.
Yeah, the one big, beautiful bill act. That hits all of us, basically, one way or the other.
Yeah, is today going to be, I'm expecting more of a, you know, Skip does the Bible from 30,000 feet. Is that kind of where, you know?
We're going to go into a little bit of detail. We certainly won't cover every aspect of the bill because some of it doesn't have to do with personal finances, yeah, which is my job.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into other areas of government spending. We won't go into that. What we're really going to try to do today is go a little more specifically into different provisions that are most likely to impact the average Joe, the average listener.
Okay. Well, let me give the listener some headings that we will be covering today. This is the tease. We would love to have you through the full hour. And, you know, for anyone listening, it's like, oh, they're talking about financial stuff. Hey, if you've ever listened to the Friday Financial Update, it is compelling and great information. And by the, you know, when you get through it, you're like, wow, I did not know. So the topics today, including new deductions and credits, we'll also consider charitable giving and deduction rule changes, estate and gift tax, which I learned, I think probably from you, Brian. I had heard some stuff on the news and it wasn't what I thought. So if you've heard things about any of this, you know, a lot of conversations, Brian, this is, you know, the water cooler talk on this has slowed down, but, you know, in the peak just in the last week or two, you know, everyone had an opinion about something they hadn't read.
Right. A lot of misinformation around this. And part of that, Steve, happened because this bill is full of areas that were talked about, you know, for a couple of years, really.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is there was a lot of pressure around this bill because the 2017 tax reform, which was called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, it was more often referred to as the Trump tax reform because it was his big legislation when he became president in the first term. That had a lot of sunset provisions, meaning that at the end of 2025, at the end of this year, if Congress hadn't taken action and passed a bill like what we got, a lot of the provisions from 2017 were going to disappear. And that would have resulted in trillions of dollars of tax increases.
Yes.
So this has been discussed as to what would that bill look like. So for a couple of years, but definitely over the last few months, this was discussed. And there were things discussed as if they were going to be in the bill that didn't make it through. So you had people talking about things. Actually, I saw this with AI. If you went to ChatGPT and asked questions about the big, beautiful bill,
yeah,
sometimes the answer it would give was wrong because it was looking at articles leading up to the final bill and topics that were at least considered to be in the bill that didn't make it.
Yeah, and you know, something you're touching on it that a lot of people I don't think realize. And although, you know, I won't sit here and I try to never ask you to be a prognosticator, but nor can you go back and say what an alternate timeline might look like. But, you know, had the November election gone differently in 24 and the Democrat Party was running the show with that, you know, with the timing out of the last act, what might we be seeing? You touched on it, but
right.
I mean, it could have been drastic.
Yeah, and what was probably most likely if you got a Democrat administration, now it probably would have required a Democrat president and Democrat
right
to get it through, but you probably would have seen some parts of the bill would have been allowed to sunset of the original Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and other parts would have been retained, you know, trying to favor certain groups. But I think what we got in the end is actually a pretty favorable bill. If it's enough, there's something in there to make everybody upset. So no one is 100% happy.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I wish it did more to address budget deficits, and you know, there's things like that that are a concern still. But in terms of just being legislation that benefits pretty broadly most Americans, I think they hit their goal. And as we go through, I think you'll see, hopefully every listener will hear something that goes, oh, wow, that's me. I benefit from that.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll tell you on this that I think is the biggest misconception when you talk about the water cooler talk and news headlines, and I heard this leading up to the bill, and I just couldn't understand. There was this message that this bill is a huge handout to the wealthy. And I think you'll hear as we go through the different areas, I don't see where they're coming up with that.
Yeah.
Now, if we had gone through the actual sunset of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the wealthy would have benefited or would have been hurt the most because the tax rates would have gone up for everybody. And I think the wealthy might have seen the highest tax increase. But in terms of from where we are now in 2025, you know, most of the benefits that we go through today, you'll see, are targeted more towards working class, middle class folks. And I'll be honest, I'll mention the areas that seem to benefit the wealthy a little bit more. But there is certainly a lot here that will lower the liabilities of middle class. The other thing I'll say about that is anytime you get a tax cut, it's probably going to benefit the wealthy more than the middle class because the wealthy pay more of the tax. So if you're going to reduce tax and half of Americans don't pay income tax, well, it's kind of hard to get a tax cut that helps people who don't pay taxes in the first place.
Right.
And I'm not disparaging people who don't pay income tax. There's a lot of working class people who don't pay income tax. They're doing great contributions to our society and our culture. But I would note that, yeah, if you, as the Republicans believe right now, if you believe that tax cuts can spur growth, you're going to create tax cuts for people who pay taxes. And right now that's mostly targeted towards the upper middle class and the very wealthy.
Well, let me say this, and we'll jump right into new deductions and credits here momentarily. I think for, you know, the last several years, plenty of people have, you know, have been gaslit by both sides of the aisle. Enough that, you know, they don't believe what they're being told. And, I have confidence, in what Brian's going to share with us, confidence that, what we share here, you can share with others and refer back to the broadcast, on the website at abqconnect.online. And with that being said, let's jump in. I guess I was going to say, Brian, you're like our Sergeant, Friday. You know, Joe Friday, you're just the facts. It's not based on emotion and political leanings. So let's jump in and look at some new deductions and tax credits, starting with one that has, you know, made a lot of headlines. No tax on tips.
Big campaign promise. Might have helped Trump, you know, win some states. Like, you know, he campaigned on this heavy in places like Nevada, places where tips are a big source of income.
Well, so, and then eventually she owned it too. I mean, she started sounding a lot like him.
Yeah. So What I'll try to note on each of these is when do they go in effect? Because some start this year, some start next year, some start in 2027. When do they end? And then who benefits from this? So no tax on tips. So it's only applies to jobs that are considered to be traditionally tip jobs as of the end of last year. So the reason for that is they don't want to say, oh, you know, you could say, well, I get tips for working on the radio, you know, like they don't want people to suddenly derive income that doesn't make sense from tips. So it starts here in 2025. And importantly, it only goes through 2028. So this is a short term
benefit. Is it a test kind of?
I think it's mostly about the end of the president's term.
Okay.
You know, so I think that's a big part of it. So so it's a $25,000 deduction against your income. So your first $25,000 of tips basically would be deducted. Now, there is a phase out on this. So when I say phase out, and you're going to hear this term a lot for the next hour, a phase out is means that if you exceed a certain income level, then you start to lose this benefit.
Yeah.
So usually it doesn't mean it's a hard stop, but the higher your income is above that limit, the more and more of this deduction.
Yeah, and if you think of servers, you know, as tips, you know, those people that are at, you know, Eddie V's in Scottsdale, Arizona, steakhouse, you know, I mean, there's people serving tables that make a considerable amount of money.
Well, and this is where the phase outs are probably more relevant is you think about the married couples.
Okay.
So the phase out on this is $150,000 of gross income if you're single.
Yeah.
So if your gross income is over 150, you start to lose this credit. If your income's over 300,000 and you're married, then you lose this credit. Now, so you think about it, let's say, you know, I'm a financial professional and I'm I'm making $500,000 a year as a financial person.
Yeah.
And my wife is, you know, a server at a restaurant or any other job that, you know, gets tips. It's my income as a married filing jointly couple that's going to bump her out of her eligibility to earn this, this credit or this deduction, I should say. So $25,000 limit starts here in 2025, phases out. The second one that's very similar is no tax on overtime. And when I think of this one, Steve, I don't know why. I always think of plumbers and electricians on this because those guys are hustling.
Yeah.
And you'll rarely meet someone in that field that's not working some overtime, but a lot of construction workers, things like that.
Law enforcement.
Law enforcement, good call. Yeah, so 2025 to 2028 again, so it's a short-term credit. It's a $12,500 deduction if you're single and $25,000 if you're married. Has the same phase out as the other. So $150,000 of income for singles, $300,000 for married. So again, so you're looking at no tax on overtime earned through this deduction, and it does phase out. So two great benefits, and you might get both tax. You know, you might be working for tips and getting overtime.
Yeah.
So this could be a big one for. For what you think of as traditionally hardworking, working class people who might be more middle income. And if you're not middle income, you make a lot of money, you're going to lose the credit. You're going to lose that deduction. So it's not one that benefits the wealthy by any means.
All right. And then, let's move along. Let's go at least one more.
And then one more here that helps our seniors. So anyone 65 and over starting this year, 2025, you get a $6,000 per person extra deduction. So this is in addition to your itemized deductions you might file where you report things like your mortgage interest and your charitable giving. Or if you take the standard deduction, you get this above and beyond either one. Again here, Steve, this whole idea that this benefits the wealthy, there is a phase out. And it's relatively low. $75,000 for a single person, you start to phase out of this special senior deduction. $150,000 of joint income for a married couple, you start to phase out. So if you're a retiree with a big pension and lots of investment income, you're not going to get the benefit of this, most likely. So, but for the average middle-class person, $6,000 per person. Now, this was their way of delivering on the campaign promise of no tax on Social Security. This is one of the ways they're trying to do that. There is still, you know, your Social Security still counts as income for federal tax purposes. But then you get this senior deduction to help offset some of that. So this was their way kind of roundabout of benefiting those 65 plus. What I like about that is some people at 65 have not filed for Social Security.
Right.
Some people at 69 have not filed it.
Yeah, 65 is the new 50.
So they're still benefiting folks 65 and over, whether you've filed for Social Security or not, which I like that aspect.
All right. And we're going to continue with a look at the Great Big Beautiful Bill with Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. He is kind enough to join us almost every Friday for our Friday financial update. Today, a full hour with Brian. And as you can already hear, you know, a lot of things that people have said about the great, big, beautiful bill, how it will, it's just going to benefit, it'll make the rich richer. We'll continue to go through the details and then you be the judge. On deck, look at car loan interest deductions, child tax credit increase, adoption credit, and more after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, it's a full hour today with Brian Cochran. He's the president of John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. Brian, once again, thanks for taking the time. It's going to be, as I said at the top, compelling to walk through the great, big, beautiful bill and hear some things. You know, I love the way you're addressing what, you know, a lot of people thought it was, but here's what it really is. Mm-hmm. We'll press on. Car loan interest deduction.
Yeah, this was a strange one, honestly, for me. It kind of came out of left field here. So the, you know, a lot of us are accustomed to deducting our mortgage interest, but now there's a deduction for your car loan interest up to $10,000 of interest paid starting in 2025. Has to be a new car. There is no income phase out on this one, so you could be of any income. And you don't have to itemize your deductions. That's really key. So you may not have enough total deductions to itemize, but you can take the standard deduction and then still benefit by deducting your mortgage interest. The only thing I don't, or your, excuse me, your car loan interest. The only thing I don't like about this one is I don't like car loans.
Yeah.
And it kind of encourages or at least rewards a little bit.
And as someone who used to sell cars, I, you know, on the same thing, kind of, you buy things that increase in value, you lease things that decrease in value. I tried. My last car was a new car. I got a smoking deal. Still probably wasn't good enough. Hindsight, I should have bought used.
Yeah, so this might encourage more bad behaviors, but if you're someone who already has a car loan, now you can deduct that interest.
$10,000.
That's a lot of interest.
Well, but when I started thinking about, well, it's new, and you know, you go get a, you know, it doesn't take long to get to a point where your payment will have $10,000 in 1 year worth of interest.
Yeah, possible. So,
especially shorter term.
Yeah, you're kind of compressing the loan.
Yeah.
So the next one is an increase to the child tax credit. This one gets pushed around a little bit back and forth. It begins in 2025, and it just raises the tax credit for the child tax credit from $2,000 a year to $2,200 per child per year. There are phase outs on this too. So again, this idea that if you're high income, you don't get the benefit of these. There's always been a phase out. It's $200,000 if you're single, $400,000 of income if you're married filing jointly.
Is that what it's always been?
Yeah. So it's still in that same range.
And for those that are going, it was only $200. Well, give me the $200.
Yeah, if you got four kids, $800. I mean, this is one that the Democrats like to see a really big child tax credit. It's one of the areas they like to use to try to address poverty is to give that money. To families. Mm-hmm. So this is one that went up, but maybe not as much as your more progressive politicians might have liked. The next one I think is really interesting. I know a lot of listeners may have adopted or maybe considering adoption. Starting in 2025, the adoption tax credit is now refundable. So what does that mean? So there's always been a tax credit for adoption. Right now it's just over $16,000 of tax credit, but it's never been refundable. Refundable means that if I have a $16,000 credit against my tax, but let's say I only owe $10,000 of tax. Well, if it's a non-refundable credit, then I can eliminate my tax burden, but I can't get any money back. I don't get the extra in my pocket. A refundable credit says, yeah, you can get some in your pocket. So now it's refundable up to $5,000. So if you think of that scenario I just gave where I've paid adoption fees, I get a tax credit, I owe $10,000 of tax, I get a $16,000 tax credit. The way that would work then is I would get $10,000 of tax eliminated that I don't have to pay now. I'd get $5,000 back in my pocket that would actually be issued as a tax refund. And then anything left over after that would carry forward to the prior to the next year to be used as a future credit. And credits, as a reminder, credits are worth more than deductions. You have a choice between getting a $1,000 tax deduction or a $1,000 credit. You want the credit because that's actual dollar for dollar tax savings. So that's pretty powerful. And they also inflation adjusted the adoption tax credit, so it'll continue to grow. So very powerful. The last one is kind of an odd one because it doesn't start for another 2 years. So it starts in 2027, and that is a tax credit for contributions to scholarship organizations. So if you give money towards a scholarship fund, again, this is a credit, not a deduction. You get $1,700 as a non-refundable credit starting in 2027. So you'll be hearing a lot of solicitations from your favorite scholarship organizations, which I think is, you know, it's good to help support those. Kind of an odd credit though. So if you add all these up, no tax on tips for the first 25,000, no tax on overtime for 12,500 for a single person, senior deduction, 6,000. These are a lot of very targeted groups that are, they're trying to benefit, and none of them are the ultra wealthy because they all, you know, basically all phase out except for the car loan interest. But I don't know a lot of billionaires that are taking loans to buy their cars. So really a lot here targeted towards working class, middle class families, families with children, families who adopt, seniors. There's some specific groups they tried to benefit.
And there's nothing in the new deductions and credits. They all apply to individuals or families or couples. And, you know, when I, the car loan, for example, this business is buying cars. That's not a...
There's a separate provision I didn't mention in our notes today, Steve, that's a special deduction, kind of an accelerated deduction for certain business expenses where you might be able to buy a vehicle through a business and get a deduction. They did retain that. That was part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We could do a whole nother hour, honestly, on the business provisions associated with this. And that might be the one area, you know, if you think about the wealthy, there are some provisions that really create tax savings for small business owners of certain right. categories.
It's the whole murky line between, you know, the car used for business, family, what have you.
Yeah. So there's some provisions there. Many of those phase out as well, but there's a lot here to try to stimulate the economy through providing more money in people's pockets to spend, but also more money in businesses so that they can spend and invest.
All right. Listen, we're going to take a break. Actually, a little bit early, but we've got plenty to get through. And if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Brian Cochran. He's the president of John Moore Associates. And you can find out more at johnmoore.com. In regards to this, Brian, I believe you've already posted in Insights information.
Yeah. This video is on our website. We have a video on the website about 15 minutes long giving a similar summary as what we're doing today. So you'll have the podcast version of today's conversation on KLYT, but also johnmoore.com. We have a video going through these same provisions.
And that's, again, that's on the Insights tab, which we mention almost every week during our Friday financial update. Don't go away. Some things on the way. In our next segment, we're going to talk about charitable giving, which I know, Brian, is a favorite topic of yours. And deduction rule changes, and coming up later, estate and gift tax. And given time, we'll even try to give some example scenarios that you may hear that, okay, I get it. That applies to me. So you have that to look forward to as well. It's all coming up as we continue our conversation with Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. We'll get to it after the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for tuning in. A lot of great content today. It's Friday, and typically our final segment of the broadcast on Friday is our Friday Financial Update with Brian Cochran. Typically at the end of the month, we get a full hour with Brian. We're doing that today, walking through the great, big, beautiful bill. And we're really not necessarily walking through the bill, but some of the things that it covered that's probably going to impact many that are listening to this broadcast. In our first segment, we talked primarily about new deductions and credits and continued that in the second segment. you can go back and listen to that at abqconnect.online when it's archived. And as Brian mentioned, you know, we're spending a full hour going into some detail on johnmoore.com on the Insights tab. They've prepared a 15-minute video. It's free to watch it. Go check it out, covering much of the same information in a shorter time. We press on, Brian, and looking at charitable giving and deduction rule changes. As I mentioned, mm-hmm. I know a favorite topic of yours.
Yeah, so it was interesting to see some of these provisions come through because we're always looking at charitable giving strategies. That was actually my last call before I came over to join you in studio, was a whole giving strategy call with a generous business owner family here. A lot of fun to discuss. So the first thing that came through on the new legislation, just kind of an odd choice. I honestly can't really explain it. It starts next year in 2026. But the first 0.5% of your gross income is no longer deductible. So what that means is, let's say you had $100,000 of income and you gave generously to charity and you want to take an itemized deduction for those gifts, the first $500 of your $100,000 of income is not eligible for a deduction. I can't really explain that. Not sure of the rationale. They did keep some things the same.
Yeah, when you hear that and you say that, it's like, what do I not know?
Yeah.
What?
I don't know if they're trying to target people who make $1 million a year of income, and they're saying, okay, the first $5,000 of your gift isn't deductible.
Yeah.
But it just kind of seems odd, and it's a very small number of 0.5%. One thing we do like about the gross income limits is, a lot of people don't know this, but you can't deduct unlimited amounts of your income for charitable purposes. So if I have $100,000 of income, the most deduction I have been able to take historically is 60% or $60,000 on $100,000 of income. And they kept that the same. There was some talk about moving that down. So that still rewards our givers by giving them. So you have the first 0.5% isn't deductible,
yeah,
but you can go as high as 60% of your income for cash gifts. And that's a pretty generous.
You know, I imagine listeners hearing that and going, 60%? No. Yeah. just who does that? And actually, and I don't know if you know, and I don't know off the top of my head, there was like, you know, I don't know if it was the turn of the century, 1900s time. There was if it was a Rockefeller or a Fitch, I don't know, one of those guys that gave a lot of their, they kept what they needed. And I think they gave over 60. It happens. People do it.
Yeah. We serve multiple families who stretch that limit every year.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
Yeah, it takes a certain lifestyle choice and a certain level of income, but it's pretty awesome when you see it in the works.
Yeah.
One thing that's funny about this, you'll appreciate this story, I think, Steve, is we work with a charitable partner called National Christian Foundation. We've had folks from them here on interviews with us together, and they help people give wisely and support kingdom causes. And they had a client who gave a very generous gift and was audited on their giving because, you know, that's one of the things that could flag an audit is, you know, is this a legitimate deduction?
Mm-hmm.
And it took, I think, almost 2 years to finish the audit. And one of the reasons they did the audit is they could not wrap their heads around why someone would give so much away.
Yeah.
And it's a great testament to the countercultural nature of biblical generosity. But this is the great part of the story is at the end of the audit, once it was all closed, the auditor, this was a person in Arizona, was the generous person. The auditor was in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if I can fly down at my own cost, can we go out to a meal and you can explain to me your values and why you feel you want to give this much to charity? And so this person got to be a witness of their faith and their generosity. Pretty cool story. So
life change, really. And, you know, not only in areas like this, but it's a reminder that we're ambassadors and the things that we do amongst other people in the culture that, you know, the culture wouldn't normally do. We do it because of Christ in us.
Mm-hmm.
It is just opportunity. Quite honestly, it hasn't happened a lot, but I know when I was doing some business networking, I either made comments or because, you know, I didn't apologize for who I was, rubbing elbows with the redeemed and unredeemed alike in the business community. And if you do that, in front of them, you will get a response more than likely for a cup of coffee and just, explain, I don't get, you know.
Yep.
But remember, it's Christ in us that makes these things possible. All right, pressing on through a look at charitable giving and deductions.
This next one's exciting for me. Not every family we serve is giving half of their income to charity, and not every family we serve has a huge income and capacity to give. But this next one's really a neat one. It starts in 2026. This is starting next year. You can actually take a charitable deduction on cash gifts to charity, even if you don't itemize. So right now, if you give $1,000 to a charity and you don't take an itemized deduction on your tax return, you don't see any tax benefit for that gift. And that really hit people a lot after the 2017 tax reform, because the standard deduction that you receive jumped up substantially. It's over $30,000 now for a couple. So if $1,000 for a single person or $2,000 for a married couple of charitable giving, cash gifts, is now something you can take a deduction, even if you don't itemize. So that's going to be a really good giving option.
And not hard to do. I mean, it's pretty simple math. I was going to get a more exact 1,000 divided by 12, right? I mean, it's giving $83 a month to an organization. And if you, you know, if you were interested in, you know what? We should be doing that. If you want to make that kind of change, there's plenty of them, and they're not all on our website. Go to the organizations page at klyt.fm, and you'll see a lot of the organizations we have on this broadcast that are doing great work in this community that could use financial support.
Yep. So it's a great incentive to either continue giving if you're already generous or to consider being generous. It's kind of giving you that tax benefit once again. So I'd love to see that. They did do that for a year or two around COVID, trying to encourage some generosity around COVID, but then it went away and now it's back with a higher limit. The next one is another example of how this bill is not necessarily targeted just for the wealthy. Starting in 2026, there is a cap on the tax benefit of your itemized deductions specifically targeted towards the high income earners. So what this means, Steve, is right now the top two tax brackets, there's a 37% tax bracket and there's a 35. So basically, if you're in that 37% tax bracket and you're giving to charity, you're writing off your mortgage interest, you're writing off state and local taxes. Those are the most common deductions against your income. The most tax benefit you can get for those is 35%. So that last 2%, basically you don't get those deductions. And some people go, oh, boo-hoo, you know, if you're in the 37% tax bracket, that seems like a small problem to have. But it is taking a little bit of the power away of these deductions for the highest income folks in the country. So kind of a weird, another kind of this odd little provisions that will hit only the higher income. And last, this is a big one, very big one if you live in a high tax state. So there is now a higher limit on your state and local tax deductions. So SALT, state and local tax.
You know where I went first.
Yeah, so
I was back to the 80s, the strategic arms limit.
So state and local taxes for most of us includes our property taxes we pay plus our state income tax. So here in New Mexico, we have both of those. If you live in Texas, you only have the state income tax, or excuse me, the state property tax. If you live in a state like California that has a 13.3% top tax rate, you know, your state and local tax could be a high number. So in the 2017 tax reform, they capped the state and local tax deduction at $10,000. So if I'm in California and I have $1 million of income and I paid $100,000 of state income tax and I have $15,000 of property tax, too bad. The most you can deduct is $10,000. Now, this is another one that has a phase out. So the cap is now $40,000, but it phases out starting at $500,000 of income and fully phases out at $600,000. So if you're over $600,000 of income, you are still subject to the $10,000 limit on your state and local tax. But for the average middle-class person who might have good state income tax they're paying, you know, here in New Mexico, our top tax rate's about 6%. So if you have $150,000 a year income as a household, you're paying quite a bit of state income tax. And then if you also have property tax, you might benefit by having this higher $40,000 threshold to cap your state and local tax. Again, more powerful for those states that have a lot of tax burden. But again, I keep repeating this as another one that phases out. You know, the ultra wealthy will not get the benefit of this one.
Which again speaks to a lot of what we heard when they were trying to pass this bill into law, that, you know, oh, this is just going to benefit the president and all his rich buddies.
Right.
Contrary to what you may have heard, there are the facts, and you have an opportunity to walk through this again. As I mentioned, this will be archived at abqconnect.online, or you can go to the website for John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. And on the Insights tab, there's a video there covering it, about a 15-minute video that Brian and his team have prepared at no cost to you. And just go check it out anytime. Visiting with us for the full hour today, Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. For our Friday financial update, we have one more segment to cover, and it's going to be a look at estate and gift tax. And given time, we'll give you some example scenarios about some of the things we talked about and we'll talk about when we come back from the break. Thanks for listening to ABQ Connect. All right, here we are. As I said at the top of the show, here we are Friday. How's that? We're about, many of us, about 3 hours away from jumping into the weekend. And we hope as you head into the weekend, you come back here. We're so grateful to have you tuned in throughout the day, soaking up great Bible teaching and other programming that is viewed through a Christian worldview lens, like coming up after this show, Jay Sekulow, and In the Market with Janet Parshall. It's been on a few months now, but one of the newer, I really appreciate what she does in the Beltway and looking at issues happening in Washington through a biblical worldview lens. She has some great guests on. And by the way, that show is live daily at 3 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock on the East Coast. And you can call into that show when you hear the toll-free number at 3 o'clock. We encourage you to do that. And as I mentioned, come back over the weekend. We have some great programming Saturday night at 6 o'clock. You get the live service from Calvary Church Saturday afternoon from noon till what are we up to now? 5 o'clock. We're bringing you the Bible School of the Air with teachings from Chuck Smith, Chuck Missler, Skip Heitzig, and then the Q&A hour before we get to the Paratus podcast from Veritas International University, currently in their third season on KLYT, and they're covering the apologetics of Jesus, I believe that's the topic, but it's great listening. And then Sunday morning, the gospel brunch, which includes the appetizer, a featured teacher at 8 a.m. 11:30 is the live service from Calvary Church. Same message you hear Saturday night. And then we also bring you Paratus following the live service. And then we finish up that gospel brunch meal with a great hour we call Dessert, a featured worship artist. Iveth Luna will be the featured artist this week. So log on to our website. Find ways to join us over the weekend. Go to klyt.fm. Look for the complete lineup. Let's jump back into our final segment with Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. And today we covered a lot of the things that will impact you and your family after the passing of the Great Big Beautiful Bill. And, you know, maybe some listening that were fearing it and finding out, wait a minute, no, okay. Not so bad. Not so bad, Brian.
Yeah, not a lot to complain about for most taxpayers. The last piece I'll mention, and then we can go through a couple examples I ran of possible beneficiaries of this bill. The last piece is around the estate tax. So estate tax, sometimes called death tax, is basically the tax owed when you transfer an estate over the federal estate tax limit. So what the way the estate tax rules work, they say, okay, we're going to basically value everything that you owned when you died. And then anything over a certain dollar amount could be subject to a tax of around 40%. So the estate tax limits really changed a lot over the years. Back in the 90s, it was $600,000 was all you can move from one generation to the next. It's been moved up and then down, then up. And this year, it's just about over $13.5 million, almost $14 million. And this was one of the big question marks for high net worth people who are doing their estate planning is how concerned should I be about this exemption, because it was set to sunset at the end of this year. And what they passed in as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act was starting in 2026, the estate exemption is going to be $15 million per person. So this is one provision that benefits those high asset wealthy folks. So that's $30 million for a couple that you can move to the next generation without tax. And it's going to be adjusted annually based on inflation. So that was a bit of a relief for folks who have built up a good net worth and were worried that the government might get a big piece after they die. So one thing that I had a chance to do as we were preparing some of this content and for today's conversation, Steve, was basically start to run some hypothetical scenarios to see how much might some of the families we serve and some of the individuals we serve, how much might they benefit from this new legislation. And we work with a tax planning software that's pretty robust, and the creators of that software were following the bill, so they started to actually pre-program in everything. So by the time it passed, we actually had the ability to model clients' tax returns. What would it look like before the bill was passed, and what does it look like now that the bill has passed? And so I'd like to go through a couple quick examples.
No, yeah, let's do that.
First, we ran a married couple we work with. They have three kids, about $140,000 of income. With all the new provisions, they're set to save about $930 of federal income tax, which was about 10% of their tax bill. So just under $1,000. They benefited from the standard deduction staying high, as well as the new child tax credit. They're actually going to get a little more benefit than that, because I know the husband bought a new truck a couple years ago on a loan. So they'll actually get to deduct the interest on his truck payment. So that'll help him some more. But I don't know what that interest is, so I couldn't model it. But so about a 10% reduction for them.
And actually, yeah, that brings us back. You mean it with the car loan interest deduction? Mm-hmm. So I didn't even think about that. I mean, I thought, oh, okay, so moving forward. But if you're in the midst of a car loan right now, it's...
Yeah, I believe it was a new car purchase. I'll have to look through the regs on that as they come through. So we then ran a high-income couple. There's a married couple we work with out of Arizona, and they make $806,000 last year. So both, you know, hard workers, high earners. Their tax savings under the new bill was $550, which was 0.2% of their tax bill. So their tax bill on that $800,000 of income was about $216,000 of federal tax.
There's another great example of, this is only going to benefit the rich.
Yeah. So they had almost no benefit. Yeah. So most of the deductions that they could have benefited from phased out with their high income. So they're still going to pay over $215,000 of federal income tax. And if you don't think that's enough on $800,000 income, I would sure love you to explain that to these people, why their $200,000 tax bill is insufficient.
It's a house.
So we also ran this for single folks. So I ran two single women that we work with who are both retired. One has a more modest income. She has about $55,000 of income. The new legislation for her helped her save about $1,000 of taxes. That was a quarter. It was actually about 26% of her federal tax bill went away with the new legislation. She gets the new senior deduction. She gets to actually deduct some more of her state and local taxes. So really a pretty powerful example for a more lower income senior. And then I have another woman we work with that has more than twice that income. She makes over $110,000 in her retirement. She only saved $980, so about 20% of her tax bill went away. So they're, again, it's still targeted towards seniors because both of those single people had more tax benefit than our couples with children. But the lower earning person actually saved more tax on a percentage basis and an absolute basis than the single retiree with $113,000 of income. And the reason for that is that higher earner, she started phasing out of some of the benefits of the tax bill. So this idea that only the wealthy benefit. There are other provisions we didn't discuss today that can benefit the wealthy, especially those who are owning a business. But really, a lot of these provisions are going to show up and create, in some cases, a small tax benefit, in some cases, a meaningful one.
So a takeaway I want to talk about, because in our conversation today, part of what I've said is, you know, essentially, hey, take notes or go back and listen to us again. And, you know, be prepared to have conversations or to be equipped to implement these in your taxes. Of course, hopefully you have someone professional making sure that's getting done right every year. One of the things I wanted to encourage people, you know, because honestly, I was kind of sitting here thinking in those conversations, all right, we got the gotcha for you to bring to your conversation. You know, a real easy way for you to have those conversations. I mentioned the 15-minute video at johnmoore.com. You can go to johnmoore.com under Insights, find the video that covers a lot of this information we gave today, and share that.